When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, my name's Stuart Miles and welcome to the Apocalypse Podcast. This week we're talking about the upcoming Microsoft Surface Duo. It's got a price, it's got a launch date. Will you need it? And I talked to the category lead of Turbo at Specialized, David Alexander, about the company's e-bike range. Apocalypse Rick Henderson has been testing out the new Sony WH-1000XM4 active noise cancelling headphones. How are they different from the M3s and should you consider getting a pair? But first, Dan, let's talk Duo.
Yes, indeed. Well, this is Microsoft's sort of return to the smartphone market as such, really. They don't like to call it a phone, but it is essentially a foldable Android-based device that can also be used as a phone. And, you know, it's a foldable, so it's got two separate screens. So it's more like some of the efforts we've seen from LG than rather than some of the efforts we've seen from Samsung and Huawei in this kind of space.
Now, presumably, because it hasn't got a folding screen, that means it shouldn't be as pricey or as expensive as the Huawei or the Samsung devices.
Well, you'd think that, wouldn't you? But actually, it's quite expensive. It's $1,399. It's available in the US to start with. It's not coming to the UK as yet, as far as we know. So, you know, it is really in that kind of bracket that puts it sort of among the more expensive sort of Galaxy Note 20 Ultra position, and also, you know, in terms of single screen smartphones. And yes, I mean, slightly under some of the more expensive foldables, but even so, it's still, you know, quite expensive for what it is hardware wise.
So this is a thing where it's a device where it's the size of a tablet that folds to the size of a phone, but it's not a phone, it's not a tablet. You've got two screens, so it's not foldable. So even if you're watching movies, you know, or doing an Excel spreadsheet, you'll have this black line down it. Very similar to, like, in my mind, the kind of video walls that we used to get in the 90s in big shops. It's just made up of lots of CRT TVs. Yeah. Who's going to use this? Where's the perfect user?
Well, I guess it's somewhere in, but you know, it's someone that is probably a lot, you know, uses Surface devices anyway, and you know, but it's somewhere in between that and someone that would use a Galaxy Note. I mean, it's got some parallels with the launch of the Galaxy Note, because I remember when we saw that on stage at IFA for the very first time in, you know, whatever it was, 2011 or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, we felt, you know, this thing was massive. And also, who would ever use a device like that? Well, obviously now that sort of opinion looks totally foolish. But I mean, it's that kind of user that actually is quite used to getting out a stylus and doing things. But it runs standard Android, Android 10 at the moment, but presumably it'll be 11 soon enough. And obviously, Microsoft have optimized their own apps for the dual screen, and apparently it's got some intelligence built in that will flip your apps to the appropriate half of the display or appropriate display. So it's going to be interesting to see whether other people develop things for this device. Interestingly, Microsoft did say in its statement yesterday when they launched it that they've been working with Google and to shape the future of Android around it as well, in terms of, you know, we're going to probably get more devices in this kind of category. So, you know, presumably that sort of built-in intelligence as to where to put apps and that kind of thing would be on other devices as well. It will be, even though Microsoft have been working on it, it will presumably be incorporated within Android.
I mean, this to me does feel like it's an iPad competitor that's mashed in with a Filofax of yesteryear. And a kind of the renaissance of trying to bring back the PDA rather than something that you'd, I can't see this replacing your phone.
No, I mean, I think it seems like a companion device to me. I mean, obviously there were, although we've seen people making more voice calls during the pandemic and video calls as well, you know, generally the trend has been going down in terms of voice calls for some time. So I guess there is a subset of users who won't, you know, don't necessarily value that voice experience anymore. But certainly, I think it's probably, I'd say a business, say you might have a phone for home and a phone for work. I mean, this might be your work phone, for example. So I think there is definitely a subset of users that would value it, and probably they would also be Microsoft 365 users as well, because obviously all those apps are integrated as well. So you know, that's I think that's where the user base is really going to be.
And could you see yourself using one of these as a companion device?
Yeah, I think so. I was sort of thinking about that yesterday, and you know, wondering about it. I think it is a bit the spec sheet isn't brilliant on it, and it's sort of more 2019 than 2020. But you know, really, does that matter in terms of the experience? One notable thing is that it's a 4G device, so presumably at some stage we'll get a 5G device, you know, and that may be in the near future. So I guess as more of us are doing more complex tasks on our phones, and the experience with that isn't always great, this could provide a route for those people that want to do more on their phones but actually find it quite difficult.
Still to come, Rick gives us his verdict on the Sony WH-1000 XM4 active noise cancelling headphones.
There are a few new features. Multi-connection is a good one. It means that you can connect two separate Bluetooth devices at exactly the same time and easily switch between them.
From a decidedly niche area of the bicycle market, e-bikes have shot to the front of the pack as we now start to look at greener, more viable ways of getting around. Whether that's because you're trying to avoid public transport, get fit, or merely do your bit for the environment, the idea that using an e-bike is cheating when it comes to cycling is long gone. I caught up with David Alexander, the head of specialised Turbo Division, which is everything e-bikes from the company, be it their road, mountain, or active bikes, to talk about the e-bike industry, how it's growing, and what's in store for the future. I started by asking David to give us a quick explainer as to what Specialized deemed an e-bike.
Oh, an industry definition. As the bicycle industry goes, we're very good at creating definitions and then promptly going elsewhere by creating something different again as well. So the dictionary definition, I suppose, would be that it's a bicycle in its common format that you'll still need to push the pedals. So there's no twist and go, if you like. It does require pedal assistance, a pedelec. Is sometimes a term that's used. There's another category of bikes called S-pedelec, which I won't get into because they're a bit more powerful than you can buy in the shops easily. You can get them in this country, but they require a certain classification. But a typical pedelec means that you push your pedals, and the motor of any description with the power from the battery aids your assistance. So it's like all the enjoyment of riding a bicycle, but with far less effort.
And what do you think has, you know, 5 years ago, I'm sure there were e-bikes around at the very edges of this thing, but it wasn't necessarily something that we're talking about or would even have you on a podcast to talk about. So what do you think has made that change in the last 12 months?
Well, there's definitely a couple of factors. I mean, you're absolutely right. E-bikes in their, you know, design and manufacturing have been around for almost as long as the traditional bicycle. You know, if you do the research and go right the way back, they've been around for many, many years. But certainly the last 5 years or indeed 12 months, the main breakthrough has been partly down to scaling down and reducing the weight of key elements. So things like the motor, but more importantly, the battery. So the battery itself nowadays, as you probably know, with your mobile phones, your other electrical appliances in the household, tend to use lithium ion type of batteries, which are they're far more modern, they're a lot lighter weight, they have a much better overall lifespan, shall we say, than previous incarnations. I mean, if you think of the sort of thing that sits in your car, a lead acid battery, very, very heavy, quite robust, but it's not just a case of scaling that down. The lithium ion technology is a lot more advanced. It allows for quite a bit more manipulation of space and size, particularly when we think about integrating it into the shape of a bicycle. You know, a car, there's lots of little nooks and crannies to hide stuff, but a bicycle is, you know, it's, for want of a better term, is two wheels, a drivetrain, and some kind of a frame which has to hold everything. So we need to fit it all into that frame. So becoming a lot lighter has made things a lot easier for people. It's made them a lot more appealing. And certainly to your point about the last 12 months or so, we've seen a huge increase of interest in active travel. So whilst we have, as I said, mountain bikes, road bikes, and active bikes, the active travel piece, which is a lot more of our traditional riding on the roads, commuting, leisure, pure enjoyment, rather than seeing cycling as a sport, that's where there's been a huge increase in interest. And of course, those are the types of folks who they have the money. The bicycles are now lighter, they're more maneuverable, they're easier to ride. And so therefore, this is kind of a win-win situation for the e-bike world.
And so do you find across the three types of bike that you create, you know, the mountain bikes, city, you know, active bikes and presumably road bikes, do you find that there's a popular variant? Are people that are thinking, well, I'm going to use this on the road, or are there people on the mountain bikes going, I want to just go up a big hill?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, Stuart, that the mountain bikes is where it's really taken off. If you like, you know, the idea of an electrically assisted bicycle has been massively taken under the mountain biker's wing, shall we say. So it was because with the road side of things, if you are a road rider or you've seen the drop handlebar bikes and ever followed any races, there's quite a lot of heritage. There's quite a lot of tradition going back even previous century, whereas mountain bikers have often been a little bit more pragmatic, maybe a little bit more up for rebelling. You know, the mountain bike in its first incarnation, as it were, back in the early 70s, was very much a different prospect and pushing the boundaries of what was capable for a bike to survive by taking a touring bike or something like that, or a clunker, as they used to be called, off-road. So mountain bikers are a little bit more open to some of these things. And now we see that the popular situation is a mountain biker who has a group of friends, guy, girl, whoever, mixed groups, gets an e-bike. And all of a sudden, the rest of the group see this. They see how much fun, enjoyment, how much ease they're having, because it allows the riders to do more of the fun stuff. And the hills aren't always seen as fun stuff for mountain bikers. It's you know, that's a bit of a broad brush, whereas road riding, it's often, oh, it's a challenge. Mountain biking, it's kind of a means to an end, and the end is the downhill. It's the fun stuff. It's the single track. So it's been huge on the mountain biking side. Road riding is a little bit more recent. You know, the introduction of e-road bikes into the world. So whether it's ourselves with our Creo platform, or whether it's other brands as well, mountain bikes and active bikes kind of came first, and the road bikes have been a little bit slower to the party. But now they're there. We see that as maybe a slower burn, but the biggest opportunity for us as a brand, and I think for a cycling populace, is the active scene, the active travel, the city bikes, if you like. I think you mentioned that term earlier, commonly referred to in bike shops as hybrids, because they can do a bit of on-road and a bit of off-road.
Yeah.
There are, of course, multiple versions of them. We have a range of different platforms. But that's where we can see a huge amount of interest, particularly with the last 3 months, actually, with needing to get out and be active, but also be healthy living. And, of course, the thought that we don't really want to be jamming ourselves back onto trains and commuting in close proximity to each other.
Now, if you're excited by the idea of getting an e-bike, have you got any tips that you think people go out and, you know, what should you look for in an e-bike if you're going to go and buy one?
You know what, that's such an important question. The first thing that I always consider, and whenever anybody's asked me this, is really think about what you want to do with the bike. Because as I mentioned, we've got a massive range, mountain, road, active, and even within those categories, there is multiple platforms. And if you sort of envisage, what do I want to do with this bike? Is it a lifestyle piece? Is it a commute tool? Is it a pure enjoyment sort of vehicle, if you like, for the mountain biking or the road riding, etc., and think, what do I want to do with it? Okay, then you go ahead and likely as not start doing your research. And bicycle shops, of course, have a huge amount of knowledge, or a wealth of knowledge. All the staff in bicycle shops typically are very well educated on the brands that they stock, what type of riding the bicycles themselves are most ideal for. But it's very rare, because we speak to our stores quite regularly, it's very rare that they ever encounter customers who walk in who've got no idea what they're looking for. Right. A lot of people will do a bit of research online first, and that certainly helps. That goes a long way. So thinking about what you want to do with the bicycle is absolutely paramount, because there's a lot of bikes out there, a lot of different styles. And we have, even within the active category, two bikes that have a very similar name, for instance, the Vardo and the Vardo SL. And to the untrained eye, it might be hard to distinguish what the difference is between them, because even looking at them on paper and then images of them, they might seem quite similar. But the specific element of the SL means that it's a lot lighter, and it's ideal for those who maybe want a bit more maneuverability in and out of the traffic. Maybe they're having to contend with steps where they live or where they commute to, or indeed they simply want to have something which is a bit more svelte looking. And then the Vardo is a little bit more, it's got a larger motor, so there's less effort right. required for you, and a larger battery as well. So there are a few details in there, but without getting too bogged down, if you think about what kind of riding am I going to do, that will help inform you as to which direction you take when you come to your purchasing decision.
Now, where do you see this going in the next couple of years? Is it just smaller batteries or lighter bikes, you know, from that perspective? Because it feels at the moment that to get an electric bike, there is a premium to pay beyond a non-electric bike. And obviously, I understand that you've got more components in there. But, you know, do you see electric bikes becoming the same price as regular bikes, you know, with non-electric bikes? And where do you see the technology, especially from Specialized, going over the next couple of years?
Great question. I mean, that forward-thinking idea is, for some, it's sort of they're constantly waiting, right? And what's the next best thing? And whilst that is fabulous, there is a point to, you've got to jump in at some stage, because otherwise you'll constantly be waiting. But yeah, one of our mantras at Specialized has for many years been a term called innovate or die. And it's very true of any product we make, whether it's a helmet, a shoe, an e-bike or a turbo, or a road bike or a mountain bike. So we're always looking to innovate, and we do a lot of work in-house. We work with a lot of partners from a manufacturing standpoint. And when it comes to evolving what we already have, I mean, we made a big step forward for many riders, moving from one type of motor system and a battery to offering two types. Now, it's not that one is necessarily better than the other. It's for a different type of rider. So we have the turbo system, we have the turbo SL system, and they fit into various different platforms. And for many riders, they need and want and enjoy the ease of using the bigger motor and the bigger battery. And others see the step forward as it's lighter, it's more maneuverable, it's a smaller battery, but they want to use more of their own legs and their lung capacity. So that's a difference, and it's a choice that riders make. But future tech, yeah, I mean, we've got high hopes for certain materials that are potentially available to us. We are looking at how lithium ion cells, the small cells which fit inside the large battery packs of all or most e-bikes, and certainly all of our turbo bikes, how they can be, again, if you like, there's a certain amount of space in the size of a frame so that it can fit a variety of different size riders. And there's only so many cells we can fit inside there. But if we can use a different size cell with a different capacity, then that might mean that we have the same frame, but we have a larger range because we've been able to fit more cells or larger cells inside the battery pack, which therefore goes inside the frame. So a lot of riders want to increase their range. So if we can do that for them, that's great. A lot of riders want to have lighter weights. So if we can also offer that, that's great as well. They may not tandem, but I suppose if you think that the goal is to have something that's almost as light as a traditional bike and have a significant range, then that would be the end game. In terms of pricing, back to the other part of your question, as these bicycles become more the majority, more the norm, then naturally there is an element of economies of scale there in the manufacturing standpoint. I'm not sure we'd ever see them get to quite the price point of non-equipped with E systems out there. So anything that doesn't have a motor and a battery inherently should be more cost effective. But many riders now are seeing the benefits of it. And it's not just, okay, they cost more. They'll cost more, but it allows the rider to do a lot more. We see a huge amount of people who are already riding these bikes, because it's so much easier, they will go out and they will do more. And then we've introduced a new system, which is lighter, and it actually encourages riders who want more of a workout to go down that road. So we're trying to cover as many bases as we can. And then, of course, there will be the purists, and that's cool as well. They won't want to have any assistance. So that's there will always be a world where there's bicycles as well as e-bicycles. But we may just find that e-bicycles become the majority rather than, at the moment, the kind of the new upstart, shall we say.
Yeah, sure. And do you ride an e-bike?
Personally, I've got both formats. So if you like, I've got an e-bike, and a lot of people refer to the non-assisted bikes as either normal bikes or acoustic bikes or analog bikes. But yeah, I have a road bike, which is an e-bike. So I have one of our Creo SLs, which for me as a rider, I take the route of I will turn the assistance down and make it more of a workout. So I make it harder for myself by riding the e-bike, whereas, of course, the common thinking is it's always a lot easier, which for most folks, that's why they want to buy the e-bike. For me personally, I want a bit of a challenge. So my road bike has the assistance level turned down. And then my mountain bike, I can't ever see myself returning to a mountain bike that doesn't have a motor and a battery in it, because the newest format of product we've been delivering is so light that it is a hair's breadth away from the weight of a traditional mountain bike, and so there's really no downsides to it. It's pure fun.
Since Sony entered the noise cancelling headphone field with the MDR-1000X in 2016, many have strived to keep up. There are a handful of brands that compete in a similar price category, with some excellent alternatives out there. With each version, Sony improves the offering again and again. Pocketlint's Rick Henderson has been using the new headphones and joins me to discuss whether they're any good and whether you should get a pair. So, Rick, what are they like?
Well, I'm a big fan of, I must admit, of the Sony ANC headphones range, and particularly the 1000X series. The first ones really sort of like changed the game, because nobody expected Sony to come into the market with such good wireless ANC headphones, because Bose pretty much owned the sector. But over the years, Sony has really carved a niche, and the 1000X M4s are like the pinnacle of everything they've done so far. They add a few extra things. They look incredibly similar to last year's model, the M3s. If you left the two of them together on the table, you wouldn't know which one to pick up.
Now, remember, they came, I think the M3s, they came in like a nice sort of, not I'm going to say beige, and it wasn't beige, but it was kind of like a stone grey or something.
Yeah, it was actually called silver, which is quite weird. It didn't look silver at all. But the new ones also come in that colour. Okay. Exactly the same colour, with exactly the same gold tints and everything. Right. Or black with rose gold tints, which are the ones I actually prefer, because I like the little rose gold flourishes. So you wouldn't tell. You couldn't tell them apart. But when you actually wear them, the new ones are much more comfortable. They have larger ear cups, which actually make them a hell of a lot more soft. And one of the problems, I mean, obviously we're not traveling anywhere at the moment.
Yeah.
But one of the problems I always had with noise cancelling headphones is that they can be restrictive or painful to wear over very long periods. And specifically, if you're on a long haulage flight, for example. Yeah. These, I couldn't see a problem. Now, obviously, I haven't tested them on a long haulage flight. Not likely to.
I don't know what's
times.
Happening. I mean, you know, surely you're jet setting everywhere all the time these days.
but I can't see a problem with them at all. They're really excellent for that. there are also improvements inside, and this is probably more important to most people. There are a few new features. Multi-connection is a good one. It means that you can connect two separate Bluetooth devices at exactly the same time and easily switch between them.
Right.
I always have my iPad and my iPhone on me, and I always then have to unconnect from one, disconnect from one, connect to the other, but not, you don't have to do that with these. Also, if you are connected to your iPad, say, and you're watching a film and you get a phone call on your iPhone or, mm-hmm. or Android device, other yep. brands are available, then the headphones will prioritize the call.
Right.
So I'll switch immediately to it, no matter which device is ringing. So that's a really good feature. Another really good feature is called speak to chat. And that is when you're wearing headphones, you listen to music with full adaptive noise cancelling switched on, and suddenly someone wanders over, say a flight attendant wanders over to want to speak to you. All you have to do is talk, and the headphones will pause your music and then allow ambient sound in. So you don't actually have to take the headphones off or remove one.
This was previously where you tap, wouldn't you,
the headphone.
Well, I remember some headphones, I'm not sure whether it was the Sony's or not, where you'd actually push in a button on the side to then kind of almost give you like walkie-talkie mode, so to speak.
Yes, or I think previous X1000X series, you held your hand over the right hand ear cup or something, which then turned on the ambient sound so you could hear what was going on. But the speaking part of it wasn't there. And this is excellent. I mean, you know, you just start talking and suddenly you can have a conversation. And then as soon as you stop talking, the headphones switch back on again.
Well, it's clever.
So it's really clever. And the final thing I really like as well, and this is something that Bowers & Wilkins did very successfully with its PX series of ANC headphones, is that as soon as you take off the 1000X M4s, there's a sensor inside the ear cup that actually knows when you're wearing it and when you're not, and it will automatically pause your music. And if you leave them off for 15 minutes, then it will automatically power them down. That allows your 30 hours of battery to last even longer, because a lot of the time people will take them off for a bit and forget that they've left. It's all in all a generational upgrade that actually, where there's so many different small features that makes sense for an upgrade.
And in terms of sound, I mean, I presume they've got Sony's 360 audio, reality audio, whatever it's called, right?
But to be honest, and this is a fallacy, actually, everything that has 360 reality audio tagged on the box is that any headphones are compatible with 360 reality audio. Yeah. However, some are sort of like better suited to it. And the Sony 1000X M4s, and I'm not sure if they've now added this to the M3s, through the Headphone Connect app, it scans your ears. It genuinely, you have to take photos of your ears. And it'll judge your ear shape so it can better tune the 360 audio experience to your ear.
I wonder if it takes into account like hairs coming out and all the other stuff.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, I'm not entirely sure whether that... I tried it before I scanned my ear, and I tried it after I scanned my ear, and I haven't really found much of a difference in audio quality. I'll be brutally honest, but it's a great feature to have. The 360 is fantastic. If you've got Tidal or Amazon Music, I think has got some 360. No, Deezer it is. It's Deezer's got some 360 stuff on it. It's a really excellent experience, and coming to the PS5, of course. But the last thing, and this is the only negative I've found so far in the tick boxes, is that for some reason Sony seems to have ditched aptX support.
Right.
So for lossless music, it now only basically relies on its own LDAC format, which is a Sony proprietary lossless format. Now, people will bemoan that. iPhone users won't care because it doesn't have aptX on any Apple device, but some Android device owners might actually care about that. So the M3s had aptX. the M4s don't have aptX, but I haven't noticed any difference in audio quality streaming wirelessly.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.